Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In the aftermath of the May 16th tornado, social media feeds in St. Louis have been filled with photos of the devastation, lists of ways people can help, and pleas for folks to protect any bricks that may have fallen off because of the tornado. Don't let them come and take your bricks. More than mere building materials, St. Louis bricks are valued for the history they hold and the reputation they carry. And for those reasons, among others, making sure people can hold on to their bricks for rebuilding and for safekeeping from those wanting to turn a profit by taking them for sale elsewhere is important. We have two guests today who can attest to what's making such vigilance over St. Louis bricks necessary. First, we have Deontay Watson Gray. Deontay is a North St. Louis resident who's been helping folks impacted by the tornado secure their homes. Deontay, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We also have joining us Michael Allen. Michael is an architectural and cultural historian who is a visiting assistant professor at West Virginia University and formerly of Washington University. Michael, welcome to you and welcome back to the show.
It's good to be on.
So people's homes are partially or totally destroyed in some cases by this tornado. And the city estimates that 4,400 buildings were damaged. Now, Deontay, we're at the start of week two since the tornado. What is it that residents are dealing with and how have you been working with them?
Yes, ma'am. So a lot of the main problems that we're having right now is people don't have a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like no sense of urgency from the city or the mayors or any political party to help these residents. Like a lot of these people have been forced to move out of their homes because they're being condemned and they literally have nowhere to go. A lot of these people are already dealing with having to struggle and be on fixed income or whatever their situation might be. A lot of these people are older and are on Social Security, and Social Security checks are not looking how they used to look. So a lot of these people are already struggling, and you're having these people, you're telling these people that, okay, we're going to condemn your house, but we're also not going to do anything to try to help you find somewhere else to stay. We're not going to provide you with any temporary housing. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get you a week's worth of stay at any type of extended stay hotel. So in simple terms, me and a couple of my brothers, they're not my blood brothers, but I call them my brothers, we have been on the front line since day one. I mean, like day one, helping feed people. We're barbecuing every day from sunup to sundown, every day. And we're not asking for any money. We do accept donations, but people come. If you need food, we have it for you. If you need Pampers, we have it for you. If you need clothes, we have it for you. We have wipes. We have sanitizing wipes. We have full body cleansing wipes where you don't need any water. Full body cleansing wipes. We have crackers, food, toothbrushes, toothpaste, feminine products, toilet tissue. If you can think about it, if you can name it, we have it for mm-hmm. you. We have stuff for the kids as well. We have toys. Like, we have stuff for the community, but it comes to a point where we can only do so much.
Right.
And it's only the community helping the community. Like, and yeah, it's really a lot that needs to be done that's not being done mm-hmm. outside of the community.
And you are doing this in community, which I think
yes, ma'am.
Is something important to underscore, because people are staying where their homes are.
Yes.
Is there anything that you can share about why people might be hesitant to go to shelters, you know, ones that are opened by the Red Cross, for example?
Yes, ma'am, because this is people's homes. Like, most of these people have been here for decades. They have seen generations come through these buildings. And the North Side in general of St. Louis, these people love their community. And they will literally sit there with nowhere to stay and sleep outside on their porch or in their car outside of their house before they get up and leave and let people just come, ransack their bricks, take all of their property, and don't give them anywhere else to go, and not even try to come up with a plan to rebuild these people's houses. With the brick, they can be reused. They can be remortared.
And so the concern for their belongings is also one of the things that is keeping people where they are.
Yes, ma'am. Most definitely. And it's not even necessarily to say that these people are afraid of people in the community taking their things. But it's the fact that these people still don't have lights. They can't see.
Yeah.
And there's a risk of, okay, we already see new vehicles in here every night that we never see on Newstead, we never see on these streets before. And they're coming in pickup trucks, hauling trucks, even 18-wheelers coming down these streets with pallet jacks, logging up equipment and rolling right out of there.
Michael, I want to come to you because you're familiar at least with what these bricks have been historically. St. Louis bricks are special, right? What is it that sets them apart from bricks that were made, you know, in other areas of the country?
Well, St. Louis has a distinctive red clay. It's a rich clay seam that runs through the city. Parts of it, you know, still contain clay to this day. And it's a color and consistency that is pretty much unparalleled outside of, you know, you might say some of the Northeast. In the center of the country, St. Louis red brick is what gives other cities red brick, from Colorado to Nebraska to California. So it is a beloved building material. It's in the tradition of brick masonry that goes back over 5,000 years. So it also represents this sort of, you know, human technology that really hasn't changed much since it was first invented. In terms of the architecture and identity of the north side that's been impacted too, brick has come to symbolize the value, the wealth that people hold in place, wealth that people, that other people from the outside have tried to rob systemically for decades. Going back to the 1970s when the city, through its interim comprehensive plan and this document prepared for the firm Team 4, called for, you know, deliberately declining and later demolishing certain areas, all that geography between Delmar and Natural Bridge, city limits to the river. While in the end, it's really the people, you know, who want to stay in place. Brick symbolizes this bond of people to place in a very profound way. And I think people are very passionate. And in the last 25 years, there was a whole rash of illegal brick harvesting in neighborhoods like The Ville, Jeff Vanderloo, St. Louis Place. We call it brick theft. A lot of that fueled by absentee property ownership, Paul McKee's Northside Regeneration, and later Steve Roberts' Urban Assets, along with LRA and other ownership. So, you know, a brick is not just a brick. It is this sort of bond to inhabitation, this right to place that's been, you know, sort of officially and unofficially denied over the last 50 years.
And Michael, you were talking about brick thieves. What does someone who is an opportunist now stand to gain financially by taking bricks that do not belong to them and selling them elsewhere?
Well, I mean, a pallet of bricks sells for about $250 to $270. So it's not huge money, but in desperate times, you know, I always say, like, the brick, a fallen brick wall is like, it's not like somebody dumped a pile of $100 bills, but they dumped a pile of $20 bills. Wouldn't you take the $20 bills? You know, are there. And if you know, if you have the wherewithal to pallet bricks and get them to a brick dealer and make that 250 times whatever many pallets you load, I mean, it's not nothing in a resource deprived area. So my fear with the tornado is, we, you know, we have all kinds of relief activities, and I can't attest to the coordination on the ground. I'm glad to hear Deontay and others who are self-deploying and doing that work. I know the National Guard is eventually showing up in pretty limited numbers. But, you know, what's to say somebody wearing a safety vest and a hard hat couldn't go in and take a bunch of brick, saying, hey, you know, we're the demolition crew, and who's going to, in this situation, ask?
Right, right.
I mean, I remember back in the early 2000s, I lived on the near north side, and people were rustling bricks from the Paul McKeown buildings. And the police would just go over if someone called and say, oh, they say they're the demolition crew. You got to call the billing division. You call the billing division, they say, oh, you should call the police.
Deontay, you've been, you know, responding to much of what Michael has been talking about.
Yes, ma'am.
What is it that stands out to you? And you know, to what extent is there awareness among the residents in your community about what has historically happened with bricks, particularly from the north side?
Yes, ma'am. So I believe a lot of the reason people don't leave the north side is because of their brick homes. Like, there's nothing like a well-built clay brick home, especially in North St. Louis City. And like I said, it's just so many memories built inside of those homes and in those structures that it holds weight. And when people see that their materials are being taken, or they're seeing that I had a pile of bricks here last night and now I only have a half a pile of bricks here, like, it hurts people. And for us to be out here every day and every night, sun up to sundown, and seeing that we're seeing new faces and realizing that people are watching their materials deplenish and watching literally their memories and lives being snatched from them, it hurts. And it just hurts. It's really hard for people down there right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a sad sight. And I just pray that they get help and they get help.
Yeah.
It's tough to talk about, really. Yeah. It's hard.
We're speaking with Deontay Watson Gray, who's a North St. Louis resident. He's been helping tornado victims whose homes have been hit by the May 16th tornado, and also helping out with other things as well. And we're speaking with Michael Allen, who's an architectural and cultural historian. He's a visiting professor, assistant professor at West Virginia University, and was formerly at Washington University. To the point that Deontay was making, Michael, about the reason folks want to be in North St. Louis, in these brick homes, do you think that the homes having been made of this brick actually, you know, lent them a little bit of strength that would not be found in homes built with other materials?
I think that's absolutely correct. Great observation. I think that, balloon and platform framing methods of wooden houses make them very disaster non-resistant. And so these brick houses do hold up. And I actually, looking at some of the drone footage that has been released, I mean, there's so many images to go through, and it's very heartbreaking from afar. But you see in some of them buildings that have very little or almost no damage, and you can look closely and see fresh tuck pointing, acts of repair and maintenance, and they are relatively unscathed next door to buildings that have fully collapsed. And so you see that a well-maintained, fully tuck-pointed brick building can hold up. But there's also the other side of it, which is the slow erosion of place through demolition means side walls and rear walls become more exposed. I know this is something we saw 20 years ago when the Malanfi immigrant home in Old North, which is no longer standing, got hit by tornadoes twice. It had once been surrounded by townhouses, and those townhouses buffered that building from heavy winds, including in the 1927 tornado. And without those buildings intervening, it was a lot more vulnerable. And some buildings built before Portland cement was added to mortar at the turn of the 20th century, if you're going back to the 19th century, and there are plenty of 19th century buildings in areas like the Greaterville, their sidewalls would have been built with the softer brick that was never meant to be, you know, the head-on brunt, take the brunt force of weather. So when the building next door gets torn down, or if it's an attached wall and they leave the soft brick and just kind of minimally tuck pointed, That building is very vulnerable to this kind of a storm.
Mm-hmm. Given that there are bricks remaining, they've not been taken out. Materials have not blown away completely. Have you noticed that among the homeowners in North St. Louis, where you're focused, Deontay, that people are paying more attention to their bricks? And if so, how are they keeping them? What are they doing with their bricks right now?
Yes, ma'am. So a lot of people that have noticed what's going on are taking more care of their bricks. You will see a lot of people literally gathering up their own bricks, or it's a community down there. Like, we're doing it as a whole. So if you see someone that wants their bricks tucked away or put somewhere else, there's people out there that will help them people put their bricks where they want them put, so they don't have to worry about that hassle. We still have residents that stays over there that houses weren't affected as badly. They're mm-hmm. okay with other people storing their bricks inside of their houses
okay.
to make sure that those people that want to make sure their bricks are still there, mm-hmm. they have somewhere to put them.
Yeah. And some of them are really serious about protecting
yes, ma'am.
Their bricks.
Yes,
right?
ma'am. Really serious. Like, it's to the point where, like I said, people are sleeping in their cars to have a 24/7 eye out to make sure these streets are not touched.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we get to some solutions. And some of the ones that have been floated, one of them is a brick bank. Michael, to what extent have brick banks been used in the past? You know, how would that practically work?
Well, brick banks have been proposed over the years in St. Louis in the early 2010s by Alderman Sam Moore and Alderman Antonio French when they were both in office. Sam Moore's sadly no longer with us, but their proposal was sort of a large warehouse with a sort of fenced compound where softer brick could be stored inside and harder brick outside. You would not really need a building. You just need some shelter for the softer bricks.
Mm-hmm.
But you would need a fairly substantial outdoor area with a secure perimeter. But, it's a pretty practical idea. The question is who provides the labor. I mean, the land, putting up the fence and finding the land is easier than the act of cleaning and palletizing the bricks. So that's where somebody would have to step in and fund such an operation. But it's, you know, pretty simple work. It's just, you know, who could pay that? It could be an AmeriCorps or sort of volunteer response. A lot of people I know, like Alderman Rasheen Aldridge, are talking about this right now. Some people are assuming it's, you know, the last rites. These bricks would end up stockpiled for future construction. That was kind of the idea Moore and French had, that, you know, demolition's going to have to happen, but we can keep this wealth in the community and rebuild with our own native building material. But right now, I'm like, if these homeowners sleeping in their cars could have some kind of secure storage where we could find a way to get their bricks there and keep them until we get the houses rebuilt, that would be a godsend.
Mm-hmm. Might there be a way to get the preservation trade nationally to come to St. Louis to help with recovery in this way?
Well, I think so. I mean, there are a lot of trained masons, a lot of masons in St. Louis. I mean, most of them have had to work on a historic building. So the skills of rebuilding are far much more within reach than a lot of people assume. I think, like, you know, engineers and architects that are doing these volunteer surveys that are creating the color codes might, hopefully they have some experience with historic buildings. If they don't, a lot of people overreact when they see a partially collapsed brick wall. They don't understand that most of the structure of the building isn't the brick. You know, it's the side walls you have to watch out for. The rear and front walls aren't holding up any weight, so they can be completely gone. The building could still stand. These are things that a lot of masons would know intuitively, and there are thousands of masons nationwide, and there is a historic trades network that could be brought in here. I think that would be a great way, because the capacity for rebuilding does exceed. Even if every local mason could be engaged, you would still need people outside. But they are outside right now with, you know, some of them idle as we're facing a slow start of a real estate recession. I think a lot of the preservation trades wouldn't mind being pulled in. That would be a very fun project to show the world that these houses are not lost. Mm-hmm. And that St. Louis can rely on the nation. I mean, we've so far, St. Louis, we've gone from you're on your own from the homeowners to a community response. We've gotten more from the city. We're getting something from the state. We might get something from FEMA eventually, but there's a whole big country out there, and I think other cities have resources to share with St. Louis in this moment.
Mm-hmm. And in the interest, too, of providing people with a little bit more information than they may have now, there are these green, yellow, orange, and red stickers that have been placed on affected homes by the city. What is it that from your perspective, Michael, that you would want to know about how these determinations are made, like which color stickers should go where, you know, and how is that related to the conversation we're having now about, you know, recovery and rebuilding?
Well, I'd like to know everything about that determination. At least one property owner had their power disconnected based on one of those stickers by Ameren. I don't know how widespread that is, it's a little bit jarring that is happening, you know, without any official condemnation. It's like, why would you? It seems like very likely to create a lot of panic and fear and provide no useful information to people. If, mm-hmm. okay, you have the red sticker, but you can still go in the building. Until when? Until what? You know?
Yeah.
I think that was a very premature decision to put the stickers on. I also wonder what the trajectory is. Anything red is just a goner. I think that may or may not be the case. Did they assess insurance? We know, you know, people are underinsured, but some people have insurance. The insurance crisis of North St. Louis is something we shouldn't take as some natural fact or blame on homeowners or building owners, because the real question is why. A lot of insurers won't insure in certain zip codes, or they'll give you, you know, a smaller premium and an inadequate policy, and then never pay out. Mm-hmm. You know, Josh Hawley, when he was Attorney General, was chasing down Allstate for disaster recovery in outside of the North Side. So we know these insurance companies, even when people are insured, make excuses on payouts. So there's a lot of tangle there. And I think that the physical condition of the property being in, you know, a terminal diagnosis, it's a little early. I mean, obviously, buildings that are completely hazardous should not be occupied. Some, I think, have probably already been partially demolished as a matter of public safety, but a lot of the buildings, I think, would withstand for 6 months, which under the city's preservation ordinance is the definition of sound.
Mm-hmm.
The triage of color coding also has an eerie resemblance to the triage of the old Team 4 master plan, which comes from a city plan commission document in 1973 that tried to color code the city. And a telescoping set of colors for areas where we will put resources to areas where we won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people remember that, even people who weren't alive in the 1970s, the cultural lore of that triage document looms large.
Yeah, those stories stay alive.
Yeah,
Deontay, as we finish here and as I ask this question, you know, we're just at the beginning of week two, and for some, maybe discussion of rebuilding, it does feel like it's too early. But from your perspective, you know, what would you like to see be, you know, the main tenets or the pillars, you know, put another way, of rebuilding in this community that people have very intentionally gone to be because of history? Because of family, and because they have seen a future there.
Okay, so I think I'm going to speak for a lot of the residents. They're not asking for anything to happen overnight. If their houses are not livable, they're okay with that. But give these people an answer, give these people a proper inspection, and give these people the proper help, because they're literally doing it on their own. We haven't seen any major news source out there since, I can't even remember. And it's just like there's little to no media coverage, and these people have nowhere to go. And they're not getting any answers. They're not seeing any type of changes happen or any type of effort. That's all they want is some effort. They're not asking for a miracle, because you can see the disaster as soon as you drive towards the north side. You can see the disaster. But these people literally just want effort and some help, because the north side is the heart of St. Louis. And show these people that they're the heart of St. Louis. Don't just tell them that, hey, we're going to condemn your house and we're not going to tell you what we're going to do with your property. Mm-hmm. Now, these people don't know if they're going to be forced to move out, if their property value is going to change and their whole living situation. Now I got to relocate. So it's just, they just want effort and help.
Mm-hmm. And at least you can start with the bricks.
Exactly. Right? Yes, ma'am.
Deontay Gray is a resident of the North Point neighborhood of St. Louis. He's been volunteering to help residents stay in homes impacted by the May 16th tornado. And Michael Allen is an architectural and cultural historian and a visiting assistant professor at West Virginia University and formerly at Washington University. Thank you to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you both.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.